It's the Burt Cohen Show. Everything that happens in America is North America-centric. There's a lot that happens across the world. We are part of the Western world. We are an extension of Europe in many ways. And the very recent defeat of French President Nicolas Sarkozy at the hands of François Hollande, a socialist, has the potential to greatly affect European politics and the future of the euro, and will no doubt ripple across the Atlantic. The election of May 6th has major implications for Europe's debt crisis, the war in Afghanistan, and global diplomacy. And I'm very pleased to have with us on the Burt Cohen Show Robert Cole, assistant professor at the Université de Paris, a native of Maryland who has lived in France for 25 years and just recently stepped off the plane and is back on this side of the Atlantic. Robert, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bert. It's nice to be with you. Thanks for inviting me on the program.
Well, tell us, you were in France at the time of the election and the run-up to the election. What did the campaign look like? Was there great enthusiasm on the streets? What did it feel like?
It was very interesting because I think this program, this political election campaign this time around was very high-strung. There was a lot of hope on the one side, on the socialist side, for a victory in the election, and there was a lot of hope on the conservative side that they were going to somehow manage to hold on to power, but they didn't. So that made a very electric campaign for the last 2 months, actually, the first and the second round campaign.
Well, at least the campaigns in Europe don't seem to last as long. They seem to be interminable here in the United States. And one thing about this country, I mean, let's face it, Barack Obama was a much better celebrity than John McCain. And here, style often trumps substance. How much of it was about style between Sarkozy and François Hollande? And how much was it about actual issues, do you think, in France?
Well, that's a very interesting point, because I tend to think that European politics, in France especially, they tend to take the voters as adults. And there's a lot of interest in the campaign itself, on the platform of each campaign. Now, of course, there's the television, there's the bells and whistles of any type of campaign, and part of it is personality. One of the big questions up until a few days prior to the election was, does François Hollande, does his personality project as a presidential person? Can he assume the role of the president? And the key occurrence that helped many people to decide that he was the presidential debates that took place a few days before the election. And there, it was very interesting, and François Hollande proved to the last remaining undecided voters that he had the character and the personality to be French president. But that would be, I think, one of the only times that the facades were more important than the program.
Well, people need to see leadership. You just get a sense of what makes a good leader. Do I feel comfortable with this person in charge? And one of the things that's been said about François Hollande was that, Nicolas Sarkozy. Sarkozy had a lot of style, a lot of bling, shall we say. And he was viewed by many as the president of the rich.
That's true.
How much do you think it was more about getting rid of Sarkozy than necessarily embracing the policies of Hollande?
Right. Well, there are several points we could follow up on in what you just said. One of the things was François Hollande used his lack of charisma to a certain extent. He does have a lot of charisma. He's a very political person. But he wanted to come across as the average president, the president of the normal man in the street. And Sarkozy, for the last 5 years, had played into the hands of the more elite, the finance, the rich people. That came across very poorly in France, in the middle of the political spectrum and the left of the political spectrum. So I think that what, on one hand, could have at one point been used as a negative point against Hollande, eventually ended up playing into his favor and playing against Sarkozy. Now, we also have to say that this election was both a victory of François Hollande and the defeat of Nicolas Sarkozy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's many of the voters voted against Sarkozy instead of voting for Hollande. But we shouldn't overstate that either, because there are many, many people who voted for Hollande because they liked his political platform. It wasn't just the vote against Sarkozy, although that was key. I think it depends who you ask on the street, whether they voted for Hollande or they voted against Sarkozy.
Well,
and I don't know to what extent the American radio audience is familiar with the French election process, but you know, we could talk about the two rounds of the of the election process.
Yes, please do. That would be very useful, because I know in the first round, which was, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, April 22nd, it was more than a little disturbing that the candidate of the National Front, Marine Le Pen, got what, 18% of the vote?
Almost 18%, yes. But if we could get into the Front National, National Front question. But first of all, I think that it's important to know that any candidate who receives 500 sponsorships from a local or national elected official can be a candidate on the for the presidential election. So there were 10 official candidates.
Uh-huh. It's not just two parties there.
No. So there were 10 different candidates, all from different parties.
Yes.
And the French have a saying, is that on the first round of the election, you vote your heart, and on the second round of the election, you eliminate the one you don't like.
Uh-huh.
That's a bit of an exaggeration, but it's very interesting that you have 10 candidates to choose from, and I think it begins at 1 month before the first round election, 2 weeks before the first round election, there is strictly controlled political campaigns on national TV and radio, which are paid for by the government. So all of the 10 candidates had the exact same amount of radio and television time.
That sounds wonderful.
Oh, it was great. And it gives an opportunity to have a wide variety of political views. Even some candidates, one of the candidates received 0.8% of the electoral votes, of the votes. I don't want to say electoral votes, they're direct votes.
Well,
but he still had an opportunity to give his platform and to debate. There were television debates between all 10 candidates.
Wow.
It's very interesting. There's a different dynamic than in American politics. I don't want to say which one is better, but they're different, and it's very interesting.
Well, the obscene power of money, especially in the 2012 election here in the U.S., is just... It's all going for buying TV, and I've heard of other countries where each party gets the same amount of time, no more, no less, and that's it. The money is controlled, and it's under control.
Right. It's considered a public service, and I think that's one of the elements that proves that in France they take the voters as adults.
Yes.
You have a public service where all of the candidates in the first round are on the same footing, and then in the second round it's the same. The two finalists, we should say, have the same amount of TV and radio program on air time, both the candidates and their representatives, their speakers of the different parties. So it's a different system. And often in the first round election, there's a lot of jostling and jockeying to get 5%, because the rule in France is even in the first round election, any party or candidate who attains 5% of your popular vote gets his campaign expenses refunded by the government, paid for by the government.
So
there's a lot of jockeying in there. But we could talk about the National Front. They're 17.6% election results in the first round was a big upset.
Yes.
It's a serious issue. And I think it had a certain outcome on the second round elections, too.
Well, the National Front, I'll say it in English because I'm best at that.
Right.
My understanding was they were largely anti-immigrant. And so how did Sarkozy use them? What was their role in the second phase, in the final phase?
Right. Well, we could turn that question around. Did Sarkozy use them, or did they use Sarkozy, manipulate Sarkozy? I think it's the National Front is an extreme right,
yes,
anti-immigration, xenophobic party, a populist party that plays on the frustrations of a wide sector of the French society, people who feel left out. Now, either they feel left out because they see that France is changing, the social makeup of France is changing,
right,
or they feel left out because of the unindustrialization. I forget how you say it in English, the désindustrialisation. So there's less and less industry,
right,
primary industry in France, and so a lot of workers don't have a job any longer. So
right,
instead of saying on the left, they vote to the extreme right.
Well, there's been some of that here, certainly, with the
of course, yeah,
appeal to the Tea Party. But I imagine
there are some similarities there. But in the election, now, if
yes,
those who followed the election from this side of the Atlantic, once the first round is finished, we have the results. Then there's jockeying for 2 weeks to see who was eliminated in the first round, who will support whom in the
right
second round. And that was where Marine Le Pen got a lot of her political playtime and TV interviews and whatnot, because who was she going to ask her voters to support? So she eventually she held on to she held her tongue for
yes
a while, and then eventually said that she was going to vote blanc. Now, we don't have that expression, I don't think, in the United States.
Vote blank.
Blanc is to put a white slip of paper in the envelope where you put your ballot instead of the slip of paper that has one of the candidates. So it doesn't count as an abstention because you're actually voting, but you vote for no one.
Mm.
So she said that she was going to vote for no one, and then hoping that her followers would imitate that policy. But she also said that her followers were adults, and she allowed them to vote who they want to. So political analysts say many National Front voters voted for Sarkozy, a few National Front voters voted for the socialist candidate, and others voted blank.
Interesting. Well, I wonder, we'll never know, had
right
she, supported Sarkozy, the vote was 52 to 48. I wonder if that would have made a difference. I wonder how much Sarkozy actually damaged himself by perhaps cozying up too much with the far right and also perhaps with Angela Merkel.
Right. Well, on the far right, that I think you're exactly right there, that Sarkozy probably lost more votes than he thought in sliding even further to the right in order to harvest some of the National Front votes. And he actually, there was a bit of a rebellion in parts of his own party, the Union for the Presidential Majority. It's a newer party that was invented by Sarkozy himself after he won the presidential elections 5 years ago. But several of the important members of that party rejected Sarkozy's sliding to the right, and they said that we should not go after the extremist votes because we'll lose our soul, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very interesting. And another person, I don't know whether many people know about François Bayrou, who is the centrist politician in France. He's tried for years and years to breathe fresh life into a party in the French center, smack dab on the political spectrum, excuse me, in the center. It's would be the child of Valéry Giscard d'Estaing's party in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when François Mitterrand won in 1981, the center more or less disappeared for a while, and François Bayrou has tried to revive the centrist policies in France. Now, he was awarded a very disappointing 8% in the first round elections. He was very surprised at that, and he actually came out a few days before the election and called on his supporters to vote Hollande.
Uh-huh.
Now, that is very interesting because, yes, economically speaking, Bayrou was very, very critical of Hollande's economic policies and his economic platform for the future of France and Europe. But Bayrou thought it was more important to protest against Sarkozy sliding to the right than just basing his decision on future economic policies. So that really helped François Hollande clinch a few percentage points, or to keep a few percentage points from sliding to Sarkozy. And the French newspaper this morning mentioned that in the upcoming parliamentary elections, now there will be parliamentary elections in France in June, mm-hmm, the Socialist Party has decided to refrain from proposing a candidate for the seat that François Bayrou now holds in the French Parliament. So that's kind of a return favor, uh-huh, for deciding to openly support François Hollande. That was a big difference between what I just mentioned about Marine Le Pen. She didn't want to support anyone because for them they're all the same.
Right.
The only real true political party is the National Front, and the others are all corrupt and the same.
Right.
And they like to describe this French Socialist Party as the Communist Socialist Plot and the Communist Socialist Party. So that's very indicative of their political leanings. But François Bayrou came out openly to support Hollande. So I think that was very interesting, too, and very important in the final election.
We are talking about the very recent election in France, the defeat of President Nicolas Sarkozy, and the election of socialist François Hollande. Well, what kind of a socialist is he? The Economist recently, the magazine recently declared Hollande to be, quote, rather dangerous, unquote.
Right.
Robert, how left, how socialist is he? Is he pretty much a pragmatist?
Well, I think, first of all, it's very interesting that The Economist would say that, but what do you expect from The Economist,
right?
From that paper, the magazine? But socialist as a meaning social democrat, right? We're not talking about socialists like the former USSR, right? Union of Socialist Republics.
Right.
Nothing to do with that. It's social democrats, mm-hmm, and actually François Hollande was the candidate which resulted from the primary elections in the French Socialist Party at the end of last year. Now, that's an interesting twist for the American audience, perhaps, because the French Socialist Party adopted the American idea of having a primary.
Oh, interesting.
Now, previously, there were no primaries in parties in France. The party managers, or the high-ranking members of the political parties, get together and elect,
sure,
or anoint, so to speak,
right,
the person who's going to carry their colors.
Right.
But that did not happen this time.
Oh, interesting.
The French Socialist Party. So they got together, and I think there were five or six candidates in the primary, and François Hollande won. So I think we should say that he's a moderate social democrat.
Uh-huh.
He's definitely not a rabble-rousing revolutionary.
Right. Right. There is the Communist Party for that. And what percentage did they end up with?
Now, for the first time since 1945, the French Communist Party did not field a candidate for the election this time.
Oh.
So the French Communist Party united in a type of coalition called the Left Front,
uh-huh,
with some other politicians who abandoned the French Socialist Party because it was sliding too much to the center, and they started a coalition. The major player in that is Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who was a former member of the French Socialist Party, and he was the candidate for the Left Front Party in, mm-hmm, these elections, and he won a surprising 11.1%, whereas 5 years ago, the French Communist Party did not get past the first round, obviously, and they had less than 5%. So that was a big surprise 5 years ago in France. Now, one of the debates questions leading up to the elections this time was how far was the Left Front going to go? And at one point, a few weeks ago, it seemed that Mélenchon might even get more votes than Marine Le Pen. Le Pen.
Yeah, really.
And his objective was to beat Le Pen in the first round voting. Now, he fell short of that.
Right.
He got 11.1%, and Le Pen got 17.6%. But he more than doubled the previous results for the French left, the French Communist Party. So it's a question of do we see his glass as half full or half empty. And I think that Jean-Luc Mélenchon and the left front party are now very primed for the upcoming parliamentary elections, and that's going to be very key for the future of French politics.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, Robert, what happens in the parliamentary elections as well as throughout Europe. There, do you sense, having been in Europe for 25 years, in France in specific, is this election an indicator of a genuine leftward swing in Europe, or was it more just about negative feelings toward the austerity measures and the lackluster economy?
Right.
Or do you think that this will also mean a swing to the left?
I think that's hard to say.
Sure.
It probably end up being the beginning of something, but I think politics in France right now are ousting the people who are in power and electing someone else. We could look no further than Spain. Spain just had general elections in November, and the Socialist Party was resoundingly defeated by the Conservative Party. So, and not only on the national level, but on the regional and local level, the Spanish Socialist Party took a very serious beating. So I don't see this as a leftward lean in all of Europe. I think each country will be a little different depending upon which part of the electoral cycle they're in. I think that conservative governments that are in power and are facing re-election probably run a serious risk of losing, whereas more center or even leftist governments who are in power could very possibly lose, like what happened in Spain recently. There were elections on Sunday also in Greece.
Oh, yes.
Time to really follow up on that, but I believe that some of the opposition leftist opposition parties have gained considerable support.
Yes.
Unfortunately, similarly to what happened in France, there's a neo-Nazi party in Greece that also I think has gotten up to 8% of the vote. So
well, desperate times make
desperate times in Europe. I think it's an anti-system voting these days. We try something new, no matter what the new is.
Right.
So.
Well,
I don't foresee Europe turning left again on the whole.
Right. Well, I wonder about the repudiation of austerity.
Yes.
And I found it interesting, Jacob Kierkegaard, a research fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics, said, I think it's wrong to say that the French election really is a complete repudiation of austerity. He said, I think it was a vote of no confidence in Nicolas Sarkozy. And it sounds like that's largely the case. But what about the austerity measures? How is that the austerity that's kind of being dictated by Germany?
Right.
What was the sense on the street about austerity? Did you see the effects of austerity in people's lives there? What did you see having lived in France all this time?
Right. Well, I think the comment is true that it's a vote against Sarkozy and also can be a vote against austerity. Now, there were austerity programs in France, not as severe as in, we could cite, Ireland, Italy, Spain, Portugal, or Greece.
Right.
So France is the second strongest economy in the European Union. So it takes a lot of program changes to really, really affect things from the ground up. But there were some austerity programs. There were lots of attacks on the social programs that they have in France. There's a lot of social protection. There was the promise to only replace one out of every two civil servants who retire in France. So there's been a drop in police and police hirings. There's been a serious drop in national education and university level education hirings. So that's where the austerity was. I recently traveled in Spain, and you could really feel the austerity more. It's kind of hard to explain how that feels over the radio, but in France, it was more a rejection of the promises that Sarkozy had made and the fact that it was very apparent that he was a follower, I don't want to say of trickle down, but it was definitely more tax breaks for the rich at the same time that more belt tightening for the workers in the middle class. And that's what was rejected. So, and François Hollande promised during his election campaign that part of his platform was to find out, try to discover some different way of pumping the European economy back up to its full strength. Now, he's not alone. He has to deal with Mrs. Merkel in Germany.
Yes.
But so that's going to be very interesting. I think they have their first meeting next
coming
week
up soon.
Sometime.
Yes.
And I've already heard some rumblings that she is not about to change her position, but I think that's one of the very, very important political decisions that they're going to be in the very near future.
Well, again, we're talking with Robert Cole, assistant professor at the Université de Paris, native of Maryland, who's lived in France for 25 years. It's expected that Hollande's first move as president will be to push Germany to renegotiate Europe's budget discipline pact to add a clause on growth.
Right.
How do you think Merkel will react to that? They like calling all the shots.
I think they like calling all the shots, and I think she was very happy in her relationship with
Sarkozy.
With Sarkozy, right?
Yes.
We called it Merkozy,
right.
Was the way everyone spoke about the two of them together. But, you know, Germany is the strongest economic force in the European Union, but France is number two. So France can't go it alone. Germany can't go it alone. And most of the political pundits today are saying that they're going to have to come to some sort of agreement. It's not only the politicians. There are many economists who are saying that austerity just does not work. That
right.
There has to be the only way to reduce debt is to have a powerful and successful economy to get more tax revenues. So I think certain clauses, certain of the policies of the European Central Bank might have to be looked at, and it may have to allow for a little bit of inflation. And that's a four-letter word in Germany,
yeah.
Inflation. They're very afraid of inflation. But we'll have to see. I think that François Hollande is on the top of the wave. He's in a very strong political position. So we'll have to see how the negotiations with Germany pan out.
And some have proposed austerity. I mean, there are some similarities in the U.S. We have this insane Ryan budget that's just, you know, very, very strong and harsh austerity programs here.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see how this impacts that. What Hollande has proposed to deal with the economic crisis, the economic difficulty,
right.
Which, as you say, isn't as bad in France. But he's suggesting what specifically? I believe it's something like Keynesian economics, really, to stimulate the economy and to ease up credit and to have kind of the opposite of austerity. What is he proposing to have as a stimulus that may actually work?
Well, during the campaign, he was very careful not to propose too many specific measures, so it's kind of difficult to answer.
Uh-huh.
Time will tell what he proposes. He does want more flexibility on the European budget treaty. He does want more, I would say, supply side. Is that what we say in the States? About getting the economy going and being sure that if the economy increases, that the taxes will roll in and help reduce the deficit. Now, France has run a deficit for over 30 years, and the deficit, service on the deficit, is the second highest element in the French budget after the national education system.
Wow.
So something has to be done. And the question was whether to continue with Sarkozy, which is reducing expenses, mainly social programs, and reducing taxes on the rich, or Hollande, who is proposing more taxes and trying to change the way the European Central Bank does some of its business. Now, the European Central Bank does not lend directly to governments, surprisingly. The European Central Bank lends to banks at 1%, and then private banks lend the money back to different state governments in Europe at 5 or 6%. So that's the public sector paying for the private sector to get more interest from the public sector again. So I think that's another one of the interesting aspects of the European Central Bank that's going to be looked at by the French.
And so he wants more, Hollande wants more economic stimulus. He certainly wants to create higher taxes on the rich. Perhaps you can talk about what his – it was something like over €1 million a year income, 75% tax or something like that?
Right. Well, first of all, the first point was to eliminate the tax cuts that Sarkozy already put in place for the wealthier people in France. And then people who make above €1 million a year will have – whatever is above the million, taxed at 75%. Now, that doesn't mean that everything is taxed. I think the base rate today is 50%. So up to $1 million will be taxed 50%, and then above $1 million is taxed 75%.
And so, are the wealthy people freaking out at that? Do you expect?
Oh, yes. They were up in arms. They're up in arms. I think a former very famous French singer, Françoise Hardy, who has not really been, she belongs to a different generation of singers. She said, if Hollande is elected, I have to leave France. And that started a lot of debate about people saying that the rich are always afraid and ready to leave France. But we're not seeing any type of capital flight of the sort that was seen when François Mitterrand was elected in 1981. Now, there was a rather serious flight of capital. They had to put some caps on how much money people could take out of the country. We haven't seen that in France now, and François Mitterrand is not the same as François Hollande. It's not the same period, and it's not the same politician. So things are pretty calm for the time being.
Now, I wonder, to prime the pump, as Franklin Roosevelt would say, and to stimulate the economy, is there enough money there? Can France do it on its own, or do they not need the participation of Angela Merkel and Germany, which has a great deal of money?
Yeah, well, it depends what you mean by a great deal of money, but I don't know. France doesn't have the money all by itself. I think no country in the European Union has the money all by itself. I mean, Hollande wants to hire back more school teachers and hire back more police and little by little go back to more spending. But obviously he can't do that unless the budget treaty is renegotiated or unless France reneges on the budget treaty requirements. And that would be a very serious proposition to undertake. So the negotiations, France does need Germany. They'll need Germany to change their, heels in the sand policy of no inflation and no deficits. So, it we'll have to see what happens over the next week. France does not have the extra money to just begin spending, of course.
Well,
and looking at different ways to find it, to put it that way.
Right. And, certainly there's some findable money in the 75% above the €1 million a year.
Yes.
But that's not, that huge, I'm sure, like here. Now, there is, I've heard from various people who have been following the economic situations in Greece and in Spain, Italy, places like that. There's a lot of grumbling, frankly, against Germany that, I mean, let's face it, Germany has an extremely long history of believing and acting like it has a right to dominate Europe. It certainly has been a factor in Greece now. I wonder if Germany will start to understand this. People, especially in Greece, have said that military domination was one thing, but financial domination is more insidious and more powerful. So I wonder if Germany will start to get that maybe they should cool it a little bit.
Well, that's an interesting question, and time will tell. Once again, there are some midterm regional elections in Germany very soon. So we'll have to see if the Angela Merkel's party will retain power in some states, or they'll lose it to the leftist coalition. I think one of the interesting things in the election of François Hollande, in addition to the fact that he himself was elected, is that it has broken the pair of Sarkozy and Merkel. So once it became apparent and the polls were saying that Hollande was going to win the election, you heard more and more voices in Europe, in different countries, saying that they too would like to renegotiate the budget treaty, and that's enough of austerity. So there, on the one hand, we can watch the news and see what type of concessions that François Hollande is allowed to or is able to pull out of Mrs. Merkel, but it's also, I think he's going to begin a movement of protest, or I guess protest a little too strong, but of people saying that maybe there's another policy that we could work on together in Europe, even if it doesn't lead to more left-leaning governments, but the left-leaning parties in the different national makeups or in the European Parliament might dare stand up and say enough is enough. We have to try something different. So it's a factor. Two factors come together. François Hollande is elected, but he'd also be the speaker for a movement, a broader social movement that's saying we have to try something different. We're not sure what it is, but austerity just doesn't work.
Interesting.
But we have to convince the Germans. That's true.
Yeah, have to convince the Germans. Not always convincible. And I found it interesting that, you know, the global investment community, the world of high finance was pretty nervous about this. And the Monday after the election, the stock markets took a little bit of a dive, but it's back up. My sense is, and tell me what your sense is on this, Robert, that the global investment community figures they'll be able to work with Hollande.
Well, yes. I mean, they're going to have to, right?
Yeah, true.
He's elected. So they'll have to just see what policies he came in. Another one of the policy proposals was a tax on financial transactions.
Yes.
So, and I know in the United States that just doesn't fly, but in France, in Europe, there are more and more people saying that that is a possibility for a future financial possibility that must be looked into, a way to get more money and to control a little bit the international financial transactions. But
well, certainly the 99% movement here has been talking about a tax on financial transactions, on large financial transactions, something like 0.25%, that wouldn't slow things down at all. So perhaps this will start to raise that issue as well. Critics have said that this vote for Hollande just puts off the inevitable belt tightening for another day. What do you think?
Excuse me, can you repeat that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Critics have said that the vote just puts off belt tightening for another day, that it's inevitable. What do you think?
Well, of course. I mean, that's the prevailing orthodoxy of the markets, right?
Yeah.
That's what we've been living with in France in Europe for the last 5 years. I guess it's hard to get the policy elite to change their tune, but we'll just have to see. I mean, I don't think that's a proper answer. But in 10 years, who knows what the economic situation will be like? The European Union is a very big financial player, economic player. It's one of the largest economies in the world. We'll have to see how they manage to adapt things to the present situation. But it's very clear that the people in the street, at least the majority of the people in France, are fed up with the austerity programs and the catering to the financial elites.
Yeah, well, I certainly will. It's no surprise to listeners. I hope that continues across the pond here, I have to say. I think it will. I do believe it will. Before we get on to other issues, the euro itself, I mean, in the Czech Republic, they're awfully glad they did not go on the euro, and it looks like Greece may go back to the drachma. Economists like Paul Krugman, for whom I have tremendous respect, have suggested that ending the euro may be a way to restore competitiveness and boost exports, resulting from a devaluation of the currency. I wonder if this will what's your sense of the strength of the euro?
That's an interesting question. I think if the euro were to end, it would be a major policy defeat for all of Europe. Now, I can understand that Greece might be tempted to leave the eurozone, but that wouldn't necessarily mean an end to the euro, although it could be an end to the euro. But having 17 different currencies makes things more difficult, and one country will play against another.
Yeah. So then there could be more stabilization, just tweaking the euro, hopefully.
I think when push comes to shove, if Germany is faced with the end of the euro or some compromising, perhaps, they would choose some compromising. And once again, that would brings us back to the European Central Bank and changing the way that the European Central Bank does business. But it's a difficult question.
Well,
but I think that they would do almost anything to make sure the euro is a success. Now, if we have to remember that the euro was pushed fast by French President François Mitterrand when the Iron Wall, the Iron Curtain came down, so to speak, when East Germany was absorbed into Western Germany.
Right.
François Mitterrand saw that as a danger, a stronger Europe, a stronger Germany inside of Europe. And so the reaction was the best way to make sure Germany doesn't look towards Russia, right, would not abandon Western Europe, was to tie it in with the euro.
Uh-huh.
So the euro was always in the plans, but I think it was pushed forward faster because East and West Germany were reunited as a way to tie Germany into the EU on a permanent basis. So, it's a monetary question, but it's also a political question that goes beyond just having a common currency in Europe. It's very comfortable to travel around Europe and
yes.
have a common currency. We don't have to worry about exchanging money. But there's a lot of responsibility. I think that Krugman often writes that the euro was invented before the proper economic policy and foundation in the European Central Bank was ironed out completely. The European Central Bank does not function in exactly the same way as the Federal Reserve. So euro is functioning with one arm tied behind its back, so to speak.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with the euro. Certainly the U.S. economy, it could affect our elections rather dramatically if the European economy, went really, really bad and the euro went down. That could help elect somebody. You talked about the soul of the party. I think it's widely recognized that the nominee of the Republican Party here simply has no soul. But it could help. It could help elect him if the euro goes down and if there's great instability there.
Yeah.
I wonder about. Let's move on to French foreign policy. Sarkozy sought to restore French national pride and emphasize France's role as a leader in the international community, and the involvement in Afghanistan seems to have been a rather big issue. How do you expect this election to affect French foreign policy with regard to Afghanistan and NATO?
Yeah, that's very interesting, too, because one of the criticisms of the conservatives towards François Hollande is that here we have a politician, he's been in politics for 30-some years, but he has no foreign experience. So I think one thing that will be interesting to look at is who he appoints as foreign minister, and because that will give us some clues as to where French international policy is going. But I think that it's clear that the French participation in Afghanistan is over. One of the key foreign policy proposals of François Hollande was to bring the French army out of Afghanistan by the end of 2012. Now, originally, the army was going to withdraw by the end of 2013, so he's just pushing that up a year. But the French consider that they've done what they can do, and it's time to cut costs and come home. And I think that the French army was previously in charge of two provinces in Afghanistan, and they finished their mission in one, and now they only have one other province, so it's not unfeasible to come back a year early, but I'm sure that will not make the U.S. Army happy.
Well, or the politicians, the right. actual people in the army might be rather pleased to come home. I would
right.
think.
Oh yeah. Yes. France has lost over 100 soldiers in Afghanistan. So that's
oh my. Yeah, they must be questioning for what. And yeah. and Sarkozy was clearly the most America-friendly French leader in half a century. He was with Washington on Iran and Syria. He increased France's military presence in Afghanistan. And right. he did take a major role in NATO's air campaign over Libya that helped kick out Muammar Gaddafi.
That's right. So that's a very interesting point. Because I think that, first of all, Sarkozy is obviously the first president or the most pro-American president since the end of World War II. And we all know, remember, Charles de Gaulle was a conservative politician, but he was a French politician first. And so he always worked so that France first and the Allies second or NATO second. And Sarkozy did not really play by those rules. He was unabashedly pro-American,
yes.
and we can see that in some of his policy decisions, like agreeing to the surge in Afghanistan. Now, the question of Northern Africa and Libya is a little bit different because that's Europe's back door, so
True.
To speak. And I think that it was very interesting that Sarkozy decided to intervene actively in Libya. Because it's so close to France and Europe, but also as a way to maybe make up for the fact that in the beginning of the Tunisian Revolution, which was prior to the
Yes.
Libyan conflict, they were lukewarm in supporting the changes in the very beginning, in the first few weeks.
Interesting.
So, you know, we can look at it in different ways, but the Libyan crisis maybe could have been a way for Sarkozy to try to gain favor in the Northern African, both in North Africa and in the North African immigration policy, the North African immigrants who live in France,
yes.
both those who are French citizens, descendants of Northern Africans, or the foreign immigrants themselves. So I think with his intervention in Libya, he hit two birds with one stone, both the flexing French's military muscle.
Right.
The doesn't have as much military muscle as the United States, obviously,
but
there is still something there. And also playing at home with that even a conservative president can help Muslim countries.
Interesting. And well, certainly France has a heck of a lot of experience in North Africa, in the Muslim countries. I mean, there was
right.
French Algeria and, you know, great... it was a great colonial power, and of course, having colonies and having them become independent generally means a lot of the people in those colonies come back to what used to be the mother country, which brings up the issue of immigration. Now,
yep.
the hard right, the National Front, played up on that very much. They didn't win. How significant do you think the factors are of immigration with regard to French identity? There's something like 5 million Muslims living in France now?
Right. Now, yes, that's a very interesting question, and it's very true that the National Front, a lot of its followers and all of its success, in quotation marks, is based on the rejection of the immigrants. Now, France has always been a country to accept immigration. But since the end of World War II, the immigration has been different. It used to be Poles and Italians who were Europeans and Catholics, and it didn't seem to cause that much of an issue. And now, being, as you said, members of former colonies or citizens from former colonies with different religious beliefs, with different skin colors, unfortunately, that gets a certain sector of the French society a little leery. So, but not all of the French society. I'd like to stress the fact that the large majority of French citizens accept foreigners and immigration. Now, when you say Muslims, 5 million Muslims in France, we could subdivide that into two different categories. There are the immigrants who still live in France, but we also have the children of the immigrants. Now, the children of immigrants who can be not only children, but are adults and they vote, and they're Muslim, but they're French. So it was interesting in the political debate that preceded the second round of elections, François Hollande managed to score several points when Sarkozy began complaining about the immigration policies and the fact that immigrants were going to be allowed to vote.
Yes.
And that slid into a discussion, a bit of a discussion about Islam in France, and François Hollande was very intelligently counterattacked in saying that most of the Muslims in France are French citizens. So there's a fine line when they start debating and speaking about Islam in France as an invasion of the foreigners. Well, they're not foreigners any longer. Well, you know, the immigrants who came to France in the 1960s and 70s to work in the factories from North Africa now have French children in France.
Yes. Hey, I thought it was interesting. Sarkozy wanted to impose a test of what he called French values on any foreigner who wanted to live in France. Now, Hollande has promised to give voting rights to immigrants. And, you know, here in the U.S., there's a great deal. I did a show recently on something called Islamophobia. Is there that there?
Oh, yes. There's Islamophobia in France. I mean, France is a very interesting country in the fact that it takes its secular society very seriously.
Uh-huh.
I could point out that in the presidential debate that lasted 3 hours, not one mention of quote-unquote God was made. No one spoke about God. There was mention of the Islam immigration, but it didn't get off into a discussion about different religions. But there is Islamophobia in France, yeah, and in Europe, too. They have the same thing in Germany, but it's the Turkish immigrants who work in Germany. So it's a serious subject. Now, getting on to the subject of allowing immigrants to vote, we have to qualify that it already exists in France. Any citizen of a European Union member state can vote in France in certain elections. So François Hollande's proposal is to broaden the possibilities that any legal immigrant in legal status can vote in local elections, municipal elections only. It cannot be a candidate, because up until now the law in France is if you can be elected, if you can vote, you can be elected.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be to allow immigrants to be elected mayors or city council members, but it would allow legal immigrants to vote in local elections. The thinking behind that is, and if you go into minority communities in France, and France is an integrated society, but the poor mm-hmm. neighborhoods or the immigrant neighborhoods are ghettos to the extent that they're very easily identified.
Right.
And the idea to give voting rights to foreigners legally resident in France is, well, they work, they pay local and state and federal taxes, and their children go to school. And most of the local policies are decided in France on the local level. So they should have their input.
Well, we certainly here are a country of immigrants, and so it seems like perhaps a majority of people who are originally French, go way back, are okay. They're comfortable with seeing Muslims as Frenchmen and women.
Right. I think that we've spoken about the reasons for Hollande's victory, recent victory in the elections. I think that there's a lot to do with the French expression of freedom, equality, and fraternity.
Yes.
I mean, it sounds like a political slogan, but it's really the center of the French Republic. And we've spoken about the left, the right, and the center. And even in the right, not the extreme right, but they take what they call the values of the Republic. And Republic in the sense of the concept of the nation, right? Not Republican or Democratic political parties, but they take that very seriously in France. It's refreshing to an extent, and it's very interesting. So I think that when we're talking about immigration or when we're talking about other policies or even the economic policies, the electoral victory of François Mitterrand is the victory of a society that wants to believe now, like it used to believe, in more equality, in redistribution, in reducing inequality, in the society in a whole, looking towards the future and not necessarily as much to the past. or to individualism, because the President Sarkozy was a key proponent of individualism.
Uh-huh. Now,
in France, there is no cult of the self-made man, as in the United States. There's more, they've tried several times to do that, and conservative political people do like to look to the United States and say that our economic success is due to the self-made man. Of course, we could talk for hours about that.
Right.
But, the recent election, I think, one of the interpretations we could bring to that is that France has gone back to its original Republican values of a society as a whole, right? Raising, a rising tide raises all boats sort of type of thing, instead of who gets the biggest yacht, so to speak.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of lessons that Americans could learn, and you are, Robert Cole, you are an American citizen, I believe, yes?
That's right, yes, yes.
And, let's hope we can learn a bit from that austerity doesn't work, it's counterproductive, and that we are a community. Thank you very much for being with us. Robert Cole, assistant professor at the Université de Paris, native of Maryland, who lived in France for 25 years. Very, very informative about the major, major election that just happened in France. Thank you.
Thank you, Bert. Thanks for inviting me for the show.
All right. And it does seem like the winds of change may be in the air. Hey, email me, bert@bertcohen.com. Love to hear from you. Thank you so much. You got